The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 503. It's the 10th of June, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Stefan Olivier, CEO of MX Hall, answering private investor questions. Also, CEO of Ascent Resources, that's Colin Hutchinson, answering private investor questions. And first time, first guest, first time he's been on, it's CEO of Optiva Securities, Christian Dennis, talks about Tullow Energy. And I've got to point out, Christian does hold stock in the company, even though he gives a very balanced estimate of the risk-reward here, as do I. I hold some shares in that company as well. And also, of course, it's a Friday, so I have a technical lady, the Duchess of the Chart, Nicola Duke, and she charts and annotates the charts of the following companies: Highland Natural Resources, Codal Minerals, Scott Gold Resources, Tullow Energy, and Keffi Minerals. And by all means, listen, if you go to voxmarkets.co.uk, follow us blog, click on the blog there, you can see those charts annotated, so you can listen to the podcast and see Nicola's fine hand at work. Don't forget, if you haven't got the app, please, you're missing out on a hugely valuable resource that's free. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app, all right, and download it on the iPhone or the Android, and you can get RNSs sent straight to the front screen of your phone when the company releases them, within seconds. And, you know, it's an essential bit of kit. All you have to do is follow the company you have an interest in, and you'll be sent their RNSs as soon as they release it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of MX Hall, that's MXO, Stefan Olivier. Thank you for coming back on, fella.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. So you're always, it always seems like a very interesting time, a busy time in MX Hall. I know there's a lot of retail investors interested in the story in the stock. And we've got some questions from private investors to submit to you. But before we do that, Stefan, could you give us an update or a summary as to what MX Hall is all about, please?
Sure. So MX Oil is an investing company going after assets, development assets. We currently hold 5% of a field offshore Nigeria, which is now producing, and we continue to look at Mexico as a jurisdiction that we will look to take advantage of.
Okay, let's get into the questions then. Number one, are there any associated costs left for MX Oil to pay re the four blocks? And secondly, will MX Oil be seeking compensation from Geo for failing to keep to the financial obligations of the joint venture? What liabilities remain in Mexico? I don't know if you can remember all that stuff, but it's about Geo and Mexico.
So, well, just to be clear, we remain 100% focused on Mexico. This week I had breakfast with the Undersecretary of Hydrocarbons for the Mexico's Ministry of Energy, that's Lourdes Melgar. So we're fully committed. We see it as a very attractive jurisdiction going forward. Well, look, a lot of the costs ongoing are made up of legal costs. We do have a director, Sergio Lopez, that is based out there, but ultimately Geo's failure to come up with any cash, you know, there's not really any recourse for us, so that is a bit of a write down, but it's a small amount of money relative to what we spent in the ground Nigeria, of course.
Okay, all right. Next question. What are the plans re-AJ sale? Will the prospective buyer be taking part in the joint venture for phase two along with the new Chinese investors?
Right. So GEC remain interested, although we're not actively chasing them. We believe the asset will be more valuable than it is today going forward. Clearly, if someone comes along and offers us an irresistible offer, of course, we'd look at it.
Okay, all right. From recent figures, it looks like AJ will yield around $4 million in margin. Why even consider selling an asset with good revenue and huge development potential?
Okay, so when we first initially looked at the sale, it was January, December, January. We had two to three remaining cash calls to make, and the structure of the sale and purchase agreement was such that GEC was supposed to fund the last two calls. Oil was trading around $30 a barrel. Our market cap was a fraction or a third of where it is today. So it made sense back then. Of course, oil's trading above 50 now. We fully funded it. So we've taken the pain of dilution to fund it. So we're no longer under any pressure to sell this asset. And we fully look forward to exploiting its full value going forward.
Okay, marvellous. Next one. On a recent podcast, you quoted that the cost of oil at the AJ field was around $31 a barrel. Does this include any royalties and local taxes applicable?
Right, so it does include all... that is an all-in price. Bear in mind, this, the price moves around in terms of your cost of recovery, as the price of oil does in terms of the tax relative to it. We do have a meeting coming up with the guys that operate the FPSO. We're going to be looking at to potentially reduce the costs. But if you look at phase one on its own, the all-in numbers are around about what was quoted previously, of around $31, $32, $33 a barrel. With phase two bolted onto it, you're talking low 20s, sort of $20 to $24 a barrel. So, our profitability, near enough triples.
Okay, cool. Has MX Oil given a presentation to Dr. Hon and the small group of investors with the recent placing? How did MX Oil attract this group of investors in the placing?
So, Cornhill Capital, our broker, holds Dr. Hon as a client. The board met Mr. Hon and his extended team several times, and we discussed our strategy going forward, what synergies there could be, bringing on strategic shareholders, and they can see the value. You know, we were undervalued. They appreciated that. We're looking for investors that are going to sit with the stock for a minimum of a couple of years going forward. Some of these guys are ultra high net worths, not just high net worths. So it's very beneficial to us. And just to clarify, these guys are not acting in concert. It's six guys. They don't know each other. So they hold approximately 30% of the company, or just under, between these six guys. In fact, with Mr. Hon, it's slightly more than that. So we've got some strategic investors in there, we'll of course consult with Mr. Hon going forward. He's a very valuable asset, and thanks to Cornhill Capital, we've now got some seriously sticky money on board.
Yeah, certainly a lot of excitement on social media when that RNS got released. Okay, next question: what are the timeframes for phase two, and what are MX Oil's plans for phase two?
Well, timing hasn't been fixed. It does depend on a number of external factors. Our working assumptions are that funding will begin early next year. The incremental costs of this are very small compared to the cost we've sunk so far. So very keen to progress this ASAP. We talk about this with the partners at the partner meetings, and I'll update in due course.
Marvellous. Next question. Why have you not issued final results to the 31st of December 2015?
Well, it's just standard. We've got a certain amount of time to issue them, and we'll do that within the time period.
Okay. Are you still looking to do JVs with Pemex?
Possibly, yes. But we're focused on round two going forward and doing it on our own. So we'll we've got a reservoir engineer, we've got a geologist, geophysicist, we'll get our own drilling guy, HS&E guy, we'll effectively build our own team, which will be more efficient, it'll cost less, and as far as operating something yourself, you can keep a lid on the costs, you can drive it as fast and hard as fast as you can, as you want, whereas partnering with someone else, it's outside of your control, and a big beast like Pemex You know, it could be a bit of a black hole. I'm not saying we wouldn't if it was attractive, but round two is not that far away. I understand that the government will be announcing round two kicking off in mid-July, and it'll be and contracts will be awarded again in December, possibly January. So we've got a lot of work to do in between now and then. We've been assessing 17 oil fields that we think are going to be as part of round two. We'll see what they are once the government announces it.
Okay. Will you bid alone in the next Mexico onshore round or bid with Geo? What are the plans going forward with Geo in Mexico?
So we won't partner with Geo going forward. We will do it ourselves.
Okay. Do you have a net present value calculation for the AJ asset at the current price of oil?
So we do have internal numbers for phases 1, 2, and 3, but we've obviously got a lot more data now that AJ4 and AJ5 are flowing. The commissioning is being finalised, by the way, for those two wells. There's a couple of engineering tweaks being made, and once that data has been fully interpreted, the partners will look to get a new CPR out. But again, it's a group thing. I can't do that on my own. We will look to release new numbers as soon as we can.
All right. When are you going to get some information on the Ogo extension?
So Ogo undoubtedly extends into our block and could more than double the proven reserves we've got. The reservoir is, outperforming as far as, what we anticipated. But again, same thing as the previous question. 3D seismic's been shot, it's been paid for, but it's not been fully interpreted. It's in the process of being done. The partners will publish a CPR as soon as it's available.
Okay, and so last question here. Why do you not buy any shares in MXR? That's you, Stefan.
I would love to be able to buy some shares. I would have loved to have bought some at 0.5. I'm constantly inside. If you think about last year, after we pre-qualified, we were assessing the blocks. We then bid and won them. Then we were doing. We were then in the process of selling them. Ajay was being commissioned. We're now waiting for flow rates to be finalised. I've got the end of year numbers coming up. It's quite difficult, really. I would like to express my desire to absolutely buy and buy in size, and we'll be looking for an opportunity to do so as soon as possible.
Okay, cool. All right, so the back drill here. For anyone that needs convincing to put MXR on their watch list, give us three reasons, please, if you could.
So, I mean, we've cleaned up the balance sheet, or we're in the process of cleaning up the balance sheet with the announcement yesterday that we're repaying our debts. Just to clarify, a few people have got onto social media saying that 6 months interest at 12% effectively is 24% annualized. That's not the case. It's a prorated monthly thing. So we're only paying 6 months interest as opposed to 12. That's why we're paying it back early. The improving market conditions, we're strongly correlated to the oil price. We were at 52.5, I think, a couple of days ago. We're currently trading just below 52. We've never looked stronger. Ajay's doing very well. So cleaned up balance sheet, much stronger.
Yeah, and it seems like, you're looking at all the majors there, all experts in the field are saying that oil is now coming back into equilibrium. So it looks like, I don't think this is a blip in the rise in oil price. It looks like it's heading back towards a norm, doesn't it, do you think?
Well, I mean, the break-even price for the world's 50 biggest oil companies is $53 a barrel, according to the world's largest drill rig owner. So, it's got to be north of here, significantly so, for them to sink multiple billions of dollars into projects. I think $300-400 billion of capex has been cut in the last sort of 12 to 18 months. I'm quite long of the oil price, but we shall see where it goes. But we've had some supply disruptions in Nigeria, Canada, Libya, for example. But what's surprised everyone is demand has been very, very strong. So we're probably going to see this rising further from here.
Marvellous, Stefan. Thanks for coming on. Speak again soon, fella.
Yeah, appreciate it, Justin, as always. Thanks so much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Ascent Resources at AST Ticker. That's Colin Hutchinson. Thanks for coming back on, Colin.
Thanks for having me back, Justin. I feel like a regular contributor now.
You are a regular man, you know, Col. And I feel like I can call you Col. It's that familiar. But for people not familiar with the story, Col, you know, tell us what Ascent is all about, please.
Okay, thanks. Just very briefly, I mean, Ascent, we have a large natural gas asset in Slovenia, 456 BCF of resource in the ground. Ascent has been involved with this asset since 2007, long before my time. Seismic was shot, two wells were drilled in 2011, 2012, which proved that there was significant potential there. The wells floated at a nice commercial rate. Since 2012 to the present day, the company has been through, first of all, a JV structural issue that was resolved in 2013. We then got into a permitting process in order to build a processing plant, which we're still negotiating. But the exciting thing that's happened recently is that we've got an alternative route to market, which doesn't need a permit anymore. And we're very close now to sort of completing that route. And that'll enable us to get into production, hopefully by the back end of this year.
Okay, good news. And some other bit of good news as well. Henderson Global Investors have taken sort of £500,000 worth of shares in a placing at 0.6 a pence, which is good, isn't it?
Yes, I was very pleased with that. We raised some money last week as well at the same price, same amount of money, £500,000 last week. And again this week, Henderson came to us and asked us if we'd be interested. The cash is very useful. It gives us enough working capital now to take us into 2017. And it enables us to start to order some of the equipment that we need to order. Some of it's quite long lead equipment, sort of 20 weeks to some of this bit of the kit that's required for the wells. So we can start to place those orders with confidence that we've got the cash in the bank. And so it was good. And it's always nice. It's a nice vote of confidence for Henderson, because obviously they've got a lot of loan notes in the company, but it's nice to see them come in for some equity.
Yeah, and like I said, they are a major backer. I'm just looking at their website, actually. They've got 92.7 billion. Under asset and the management, assets and management. So it's, you know, they're a big fund. They're a big player.
And they've been very supportive of Ascent since 2012. I mean, they've funded the company for most of that period.
Yeah. Okay, we got some questions here from private investors. So let's skip through these if we can. First and foremost, is the board confident of obtaining an alternative gas route?
Yes, I think we are confident. We put out, there was an operational update, went out last week as well, just before the placing announcement. And in that, we said that there's one agreement, there's two agreements required to get this sort of route up and running. The first one has been agreed by all the parties and is now just gone through board approval process with the various companies involved. There's a second agreement as well, which is a slightly more commercial agreement, which took a little bit more work, and that is in a close to final stage, and we're hopeful of wrapping this all up. I keep saying by the end of June, and I'm still hopeful that we'll hit that date.
Okay, next question is the company aware of any interest by predators? Because I know, you know, a while back, it was Cadogan in April.
Yeah, I mean, at the minute, no, not aware of anything. We obviously had the approach from Cadogan back beginning of April, which Wendo Gateway again once the share price spiked. But at the minute, no, there's no, not aware of anything.
Okay, next question. Can you explain the massive trading volumes recently? Nearly half the market cap traded in one day. What's going on? No holdings, RNS following.
It was a huge volume of shares being traded at the moment, and that has been the case really back since in the beginning of April when we had the Cadogan approach. We saw massive volumes then. I think there's a lot of interest in the stock at the moment, and I guess the market cap is low relative to the potential of the asset. So I think that's what drives the high liquidity.
Yeah, well, I remember you coming on the podcast, you know, and I looked at the stock, I said, the market cap here is next to nothing compared to what you have asset-wise.
Yeah.
And I remember investing a while back, and back then, you know, you weren't that much mentioned on social media, but now, you know, you are one of the hot stocks. You know, you're always getting mentioned. And I think, like you said, that takeover that sparked, lit the fire of interest, I think.
I think that's right.
And since then, you are on a lot of people's watch lists now. I think it's just, that, you know, that accounts, I think, for the increased trading volumes there, which is not a bad thing, you know? Okay, next question. What are your plans for dealing with the client loan notes due this November?
Yes, we have about 9 million of loan notes left that fall due in November this year. They're convertible at a penny. And I guess the hope is that by the time we get to November, our share price should be in excess of that and the loan notes will be converted.
Yeah, because I mean, looking now, the price is, 0.875? So you're getting there, and obviously, hopefully, with good news out about the gas route, then maybe that will go above that. So hopefully, it looks like. I mean, you know, you've said for a long time towards the back end of this year things are going to happen, you know, and you haven't changed on that point. So hopefully, fingers crossed, you stick to that plan. So all right. So next question is: how much capital do you estimate will be required for operations and equipment to develop the first gas?
Yeah, we did a fairly full letter to shareholders in November of last year, which I think was the first time we mentioned this alternative route to market in any detail. And I think in that document we quote a figure of 3.2 million euros for the capital equipment required. I think that's still a reasonably good estimate. So to get the first gas, it'll be 3.2 for the capex, and then something additional for the working capital. So probably around £3 million is what we need to get the first gas.
Okay. And the last question is, how far will the £1 million funds go time span wise?
The £1 million, I mean, if that was purely to fund working capital, that takes us right into 2017. Obviously, the hope would be that we get these agreements signed up for the end of the month and we're able to progress down the alternative route to market, and we're able to start recompleting wells and building doing the upgrade to the processing plant that would be required. So if that happens, then obviously we'll need to get more funds on top of this 1 million, and we have that. We have a debt facility with Henderson at 7 million, which we've drawn 800,000 off. So it might be from that, or depending on how the share price performs, there could be another equity placing.
Okay, marvellous. Well, listen, Colin, you're rehearsing this now and practice. So if you can give us three reasons why an investor should put Ascent Resources on their Vox Markets watchlist, what are they?
Okay, three reasons. I'm not sure whether I give the three reasons, same three reasons every time, but I think that the main three reasons why someone should invest in Ascent is we've got a significant gas resource, which is in a good, stable EU location, and it's close to production. And I guess the third one now is we've got cash in the bank. The company is funded to take us a significant way towards first gas.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing. You know, you're restating your reasons are good. I mean, you know, if you keep changing them, that's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing you stick to them, you know. So at least it's visibility there. Colin, thanks very much for coming on again, fella. And, I doubt it'll be a long time until we speak again.
Perfect. Yeah, let's hope we chat again soon. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Optiva Securities, Christian Dennis. Thank you for joining me, Christian.
No, thank you, Justin. Glad to be on.
Yeah, because we know of each other. We've exchanged emails, and what we have Sasha as a mutual friend there. We both know about. And so, explain what you're all about there at Optiva, please, Christian.
Okay, Optiva Securities is a broker which is specialising in working with companies where we feel there's a lot of potential for capital growth over the long period of time. The markets that we are specializing in is AIM and the Standard List, and we're also looking at the ISDX a little bit as well at the moment. We're currently brokers to around 17 companies, and we are looking to build that up over the next few years. We think a very, very interesting group of companies that we're working with at the moment, all with different different areas that they're working in, but all quite exciting. And I think you know about a few of those. We're brokers to Decal Oil, which is a company that we originally funded back in 2013 at the time of the original flotation, and that company now is in production, generating cash, and really established itself as a really top example of coming to the London market, where you actually deliver on what you're going to do, start generating cash and make shareholders money. So we're very happy with that. We're brokers to Upland Resources with Steve Staley, who's building an oil and gas business in the UK and internationally. Worked with him before on a number of things, so we're excited about where that will go. Centera Energy is a company that we list is currently suspended now, looking to do a reverse takeover. And I think the one that I'm going to talk to you about today is Tullow Energy, which is another
yes.
one that we really like.
Well, exactly. I've got to say, I hold stock in Tullow Energy. I had Colm on the podcast a while back.
Yeah.
I liked them then. And for some reason, I was just reading through. I saw someone tweet about Tullow about a couple of months back, maybe. And I decided to buy some stock there. I thought, yeah, I like that. Because I listened back to the old podcast. And I liked what they're all about. You know, the shareholder register is strong. You know, the previous experience in that area of work, in coal bed methane.
Yeah.
And Colin knew his stuff, and I thought it was quite an exciting prospect. So Sasha came on in the start of the week, and he talked about a whole bunch of stocks, but it's nice to focus down. So take us through Tullow, and so a basic outline as to what Tullow are all about, please, Christian.
Well, I mean, I think basically, you know, going back to what you were saying, you're starting off with a very strong management team. You've got Tony Gilby there, who was a founder of Sunshine Gas out in Australia, and if anyone knows about coal bed methane business, they know that the Australians really, you know, cracked the nut when it came to commercializing coal bed methane, and companies like Sunshine Gas and a whole other clutch of companies ended up being acquired for substantial amounts of money by some of the big international groups. British Gas, Shell all came in and bought these CBM companies and are now putting together big LNG projects, exporting that gas out of Australia into Asia. So that company, Sunshine Gas, which Tony founded, was bought out for $1.1 billion in 2008. So, I mean, it was a fantastic result for shareholders. And they then, after that, you know, Tony and his team, you know, looked around the world where they thought they could find some other interesting CBM assets. And the one that they found, which they thought had huge potential, was this project in Botswana. And over the last few years, they have been moving that forward. And so that was the first thing that attracted to us, and a successful management team really understand CBM. It's a difficult commodity, so you do really need to know what you're doing, and these guys do that. And so that was the first thing. I mean, then you just look at the what's going on in Southern Africa, where they have got huge power issues, and even, you know, Botswana, which you'd think wouldn't have power problems, they do. They have brownouts on a regular basis, and you look at South Africa, where they've got huge demands for power. So this region of the world needs power, and I think being able to offer a clean power solution like gas is a good answer to that. So they're the two things, and then obviously there's the actual what they're doing on the ground there. Is it's a good time to be actually entering into this investment, because we're getting to a point now where things could really start to accelerate for them.
Yeah, so they've had a bit of interest there. I mean, they're up around about 8% today, still under 10 million market cap. So Tullow hope to produce commercial gas and then bring this to power stations. Because at the moment, is it true that Botswana pretty much rely on diesel, which is imported, and also not only is it a dirty sort of fuel and almost frowned upon environmentally, but it's very costly as well?
Well, yes and no. I mean, they do have coal-fired power plants. They've got the Murupulu B power plant, which was supposedly going to be a 600 megawatt power plant, but unfortunately it just hasn't produced as much power as they thought. It's probably running at around 200 megawatts at the moment. Well, that's coal-fired. And they have got plans potentially to put other coal-fired plants into Botswana at some point in the future. But some of the industrial users, like the Orapa diamond mine, they are running, they've got a 90 megawatt power plant there that's running exclusively on diesel, which is very expensive. And you're right, I mean, it's to be using diesel power, you know, you're paying so much more than you would be by using any other, even coal would be a lot cheaper than diesel. But potentially, if you can get a gas supply in, that could reduce your cost of power significantly. So, they've got coal and they've got diesel at the moment, so they've probably got the two worst things that they could be using. So there's a solar power project tender out there in Botswana for about 100 megawatts of solar power, which they're looking to develop. But they are keen on you know, what people like Tulu are doing in terms of bringing on gas as well.
And just looking at the Arapa, I've just googled it here, and it's the world's largest diamond mine by area.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, they've got a tender out there for gas, because they would like to move that from diesel to gas at some point in the future. So, you know, that is that's a potential target for Tulu further down the line. Obviously, they've got to get to the point where they can demonstrate they've got sufficient reserves to support that. That's there for the taking for a company like Tulu.
So where are they at the moment, Tulu, as you know, in their development cycle? Where are they?
Well, they are getting to an interesting point where they are currently testing the Salimo wells and looking to achieve sustained gas flows. And in their last, I think, quarterly announcement, they said post year end that they had sustained gas flow was achieved post quarter end, and they'll be looking to update the market on how they get it going with that over the coming weeks. They're not quite there yet, but they are, you know, well on track to get the sustained gas flow that they need then to support a project. And what will happen is that we would hope the other thing that they're looking to do is to get an offtake agreement signed up with either the Botswana Power Company or somebody else for gas supply. And if they can do that and they can get sustained gas, then, you know, my feeling is that the middle bit, which is actually getting the funding together to put a gas to power project together, is going to be quite achievable for them.
Because
they'll have the two tricky bits here is getting the sustained gas and getting an offtake, and both of those look like they are that we're close to getting both of those. They're not quite there yet, but we're pretty close to getting both of those. And so you're putting the middle bit in, which is financing a power project, is I don't think going to be a major challenge for them, because the financiers will see the offtake there, they'll see the gas there, and they'll say, okay, we can make X return on this investment, so we're happy to put that money in. Even it could be, you know, quite substantial amounts of money. As long as the rates of return stack up, the money will be available. And there's African development banks and there's big power companies. I mean, GE, you know, recently said that they wanted to double their investments in Africa. They're currently running at about $3 billion. They're looking to take that up to $6 billion. And the main area they want to increase that investment in is power, because they want to be a big part of the power growth in Africa. And then you've got the African development banks that are have got funds, and they're looking for projects. And if you in a green energy project, like clean gas, it ticks all the right boxes for these guys. So there should be the plant and the money there. So that's what I find quite interesting about this. The big unknown for us all as investors is sustained gas. I mean, and that is, you know, they haven't got to that point yet. I think that's where we need to be we need to be cautious and cognizant of that fact that that's what they need. And that's why the shares are trading where they are, and not significantly higher. because the sustained gas and then an offtake, then obviously you're into a different ball game on this.
Yeah, so that's, we can see that if the risk is such that they need to get this flow rate commercial, to a commercial level.
That's it.
So once that happens, just to get this in order, so once, if they get sustained gas flow rates, then I assume the offtake then will come along. I mean, that's the next sticking point, if there is one. But once those two are in, then the reward is quite big, isn't it, here?
Because as you said, you've got diesel power that they could substitute gas for. I mean, it's a no-brainer. You know, if you're running a diesel power plant, if you can put gas in there at a significantly less cost, of course you would do that. So they've got some really lots of low-hanging fruit around Botswana, which they could hit on. The government, I'm sure, would be very receptive to gas-fired power plants rather than CO2 emitting coal-fired plants. So, you know, there'll be a real willingness to support what they can do. So, yeah, the actual supply side is really favourable for them, very favourable.
So, you know, look at these, you know, elements they have to put in position here, the commercial flow rate. Do we know on a timescale when this will be announced or achievable by?
Well, the company's, it's ongoing at the moment, so you know we're looking at weeks rather than months in terms of getting some more positive data from the company or updates from them. It's not something that's going to go on for months and months and months. It's an ongoing program happening at the moment, and I think we should hear a bit more over the coming weeks.
Marvellous. Christian, thank you for coming on and, shedding some light on that. Because I know, like you said, you know, if there are people that can do it, these guys can do it because they've done it before. But it all hinges upon that, you know, commercial flow rate. If they achieve that, then we'll probably see a significant re-rating in the share price. But it's achieving that, isn't it?
It is achieving that. I mean, Brandon Hill did some research on the company at the time of the IPO. And bear in mind, they IPO'd in London at 6.5p. So... Actually, we're disappointed the shares have dropped below that. I think people are sort of waiting for this sustained cash flow data to come out, and you've seen the shares drift. But, I mean, they should really, you'd expect them to be trading at that level or higher, really, bearing on where they are at the moment. But, I mean, Brandon Hill at that time, you know, they had put out a note with a 24p share price valuation on it. So, you know, you can see where the potential for this is longer term. I say you have to be cognizant that they're not there yet, and that's why when you're dealing with these types of companies, that is the thing. You know, you're not going to get a multiple return on your money without taking some risk on board, I'm afraid.
Yeah. And just to point out, at the moment, the share prices are looking at 8.82% up at 4.63 pence. So you can see that Brandon Hill target there is significantly higher at the moment than that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Lovely, Kristen. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, I hope that's helpful, Justin. And, look forward to talking to you again.
The Box Markets Podcast with Justin Wade.
It's a Friday. That means I have on technical analyst, the Duchess of the Chart. It's Nicola Duke. You all right, Nick?
Yay. Hello. Your show's so full today. I'm lucky you could squeeze me in.
There's always room for the best technical analyst in the UK as opposed to the favourite technical analyst, which is Zach Mayer. Of course, he's the favourite. You're the best. I'm not saying that. He said,
"I know I'm not." No. It's just some ideas. Hopefully, it helps people think about the charts and learn some technicals for themselves.
Yeah, well, it's almost like I always compare it almost to, you know, a football team. You know, you can have two international players there, high standard, but use different styles and techniques, and you both do. You know, I mean, there's certain things you both use, but there's certain things he looks for. I mean.
Honestly, the more views, the better. And people will learn their own style. They'll learn like patterns and things that they'll look for themselves. So
yeah, yeah, like Zach, Zach likes gaps. He's very probably he likes the moving averages, a 50-day moving average, and I know you like Fibonacci, and he doesn't use that so much, and so yeah, it's all different kind of stuff. Okay, so listen, what do you think about the last 2 days? They've been selling off. Is this the big Brexit thing? Are we in for a bigger fall? What's your opinion? What's your take on it, Nick?
I would be very surprised if we fall next week. Every month, people need to just mark on their calendar when option expiration is. And next week is option expiration and triple witching. And the VIX options expire on Wednesday and the stock options expire at the end of the week on Friday. And everybody, you know, buys puts. They buy protection against stocks falling. So the idea that the market will sell really hard into the VIX expiration and let all those people make money on their puts is crazy. They won't. Most 9 months out of 10, the market will sell off the week before option expiration week, which is this week, and then rally option expiration week. Now, I'm saying 9 months out of 10. The last time that we didn't do this was August last year, which, of course, everybody knows was really ugly.
Yeah, yeah. Was that when the footage was dropping? Like, you're getting used to it, dropping like 4% in a day or something,
it was
or 2%.
Very ugly. But, yeah, yeah. You know, everybody, like, most professional traders know about this trade, and so everybody expects it. So I think that, although, you know, people are so ready to sell this market and sell in May and it's all, the world is ending. But, you know, this trade normally works 9 times out of 10. So I would be surprised if we sell off hard next week.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you reckon we could have a bit of a rally next week. I'm away next week. So we could
see a tradable low tonight or Monday for next week, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. It'd be very interesting to see if this plays out into that stat there. All right, Nick, let's look at some individual stocks as suggested by people on Twitter. And let's get the stocks. I sent you a list here and I've just lost them. Oh, there they are. So starting off with HNR, that's Highland Natural Resources. And this is a company that's got a technology, and I think it's a small company with a technology for oil and for getting more oil out of the ground, basically. They're in deals. Is it with Schlumberger? One of the biggest. It's either Schlumberger or the other big sort of oil sector. But anyway, I have another podcast, and they're very interesting. And their share price has flown. But today they released a statement. There's going to be a bit of a delay, I think, in testing. And it's dropped, but they've had a massive rise from 10 pence up to pretty much 80 pence in the last few weeks. And now it's dropped back a bit, now it's down to 51 pence. What do you see? Obviously, we're looking for a support level here somewhere, aren't we?
Obviously, we are. And, you know, we had a really good, I don't know why I didn't see this last time, but we've got a little, on today's chart, people will notice a little technical analysis lesson called bearish divergence. And bearish divergence is where the market makes a new high, but your oscillator, like your, so it makes a higher high relative to the previous high. But the oscillator, I've got an RSI on the chart today, but I like a CCI as well. And MACD, I'm not a big fan of MACD, but divergence is one of the few things that MACD does do well. Mm. Anyway, so if the oscillator makes the lower high and the market price is a higher high, it's a sign of underlying weakness in the market.
Yeah, because I can see that. Because, right, so on the date of, when was this? 26th of May, they're up about 70 pence. They dipped down then about 50 pence, and they went back up, back above, they opened above 72 pence over there, but the RSI was going downwards. So it rallied a bit, the RSI, there was no strength there, was there, in that rally?
No. Exactly. Mm. So I think that we'll see at least a 2-wave correction in this stock. And we've had the first wave correction from the 24th of May to the 1st of June. So I think that we'll have one more leg lower, similar to that. The 50% retracement of the entire rally is at 45. Mm-hmm. So I would have a look for support there. Otherwise, the 61.8. And where the 50-day moving average will be when it, by the time it gets there, is at 37. So I think potentially that they could come back to either 45 or 37. Those are really good levels to look for support to buy. and look for the whatever oscillator you are using.
Yeah.
Like an RSI or CCI has bottomed out.
Okay.
So, no. But a good lesson in bearish divergence, which is a good warning sign. If you're in a stock and you're long and you see that, that's usually a warning that the trend is waning.
Yeah. Okay. So if you're not in, wait. If you are in, then, you know, I mean, if you're a long-term investor, it's fine, but don't go piling in yet anymore. So, you know, maybe...
Right.
Maybe
go
on.
Yeah. I think... it's had a nasty. I was going to say it's, you know, hard to say take profits down here at 51 because I don't know where people got in, but
But I think just be aware that it doesn't look very strong at the moment, you know, and there's a chance of some weakness coming, isn't there?
Be aware that there's potential, like this will be now a close. If we close down here at 51, we've closed below the daily 20 moving average. So then when you see that, you look nowhere to the next one, which is the 50-day moving average, and that's down at 36.
Okay, all right. Okay, so the next stock is Codal Minerals, K-O-D. Let's type that in there. So what do you think of this? It's not really going anywhere at the moment. Spiked it when
not going anywhere. Potentially a really good double bottom at 0.003, which, you know, is like nearly three, isn't it? So all week it's held support at 0.04. If you are long, you need to stop well below that double bottom level at 0.03, not just below this weekly low. If it closes again above the moving average at 0.06, then this one is on its way. The oscillator, I've got a CCI on the chart today, is in oversold territory. When this turns up, it's going to go. Okay. So I like it, but it's just going sideways until we get a daily close above 0.06.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, that's Codal Minerals.
Back above the 200, maybe. What's really cool about that is if it gets closes above there and it goes, it will pull both the 20 and the 50, which are flat and right there. It'll pull them back above that and it will get a bullish cross. Okay. And then we'll get some attention. So, and the upside, you know, we've got a long way to the first target on this one at 0.2, which is the... early 2015 lows.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Next one is Scott Gold Resources, SGZ or SGZ. But I do prefer Z rather than Z. I don't know why. I know it's American, but I prefer Z. You know what I'm saying? Anyway.
It's an Australian one. Maybe it was something else. No.
Oh, this one?
Much about this. Yes.
Oh, yeah. But do you know, we had issues with this on the last one. I think we've done this recently, actually. So Scott Gold Resources, SGZ. No, yes. It's listed in this country, and I think you because you use Pro Real Time, didn't you? I think you had problems searching for it, but
and I've got it now. It's all good.
Oh, cool. So SGZ.
Okay, so we've got a double bottom. Mm-hmm. So it had a nasty spike down. You know, in these nasty spikes, look where it spiked down to. It spiked right down to that 2014 March low, exactly the same, 0.6, 0.7 all the way down there. Really, really nasty. But I like this. It's not ready yet. It needs to bottom. I really like the support at 0.61. I think we might dip down there and then bounce back up to hold Fibonacci support there. And I think it will do that because it's respecting the other Fibonacci levels. And when you see that on a chart, it's usually a good sign that it's going to respect the other one. So this looks all right.
Yeah, so have you got 0.775 is the price at the moment. Is that right?
I do. I have 0.775, and I have really good support at 0.61.
Okay,
it's not ready to buy here. Mm-hmm. But if you're long already, it's not that I dislike it, but I think that we could get a dip back to 0.61, potentially 0.04.
Okay, going
is where your stop needs to be, but 0.61 should be good support.
Marvellous stuff. All right, cool. Next one, which a stock that I hold, and I just had Christine Dennis on from Optiva Securities, who has an interest in the stock, of course, and represents them. But this is a strong stock at the moment. It's getting a lot of interest on Twitter, social media. It's called Tlou Energy, T-L-O-U, and they're coal bed methane operation, just started in Botswana, looking to achieve commercial gas flow rates. What do you think, Nick? That's called a hammerhead, isn't it?
8% today.
Yeah,
extraordinary.
Yeah.
So yeah, if it closes up here at 4.6 and it's closed above that April high, it'll be the highest close since February, which is really good. But the 50% retracement of the entire decline is at 4.7. And that's where we've stalled sort of around there twice now. We stalled there 19th of May and then yesterday. Mm-hmm. Sorry, today. So I that's really what it's got to get above to confirm that the bottom's in. If it's if it just retraces to the 50% and then carries on lower, that's just a mean retracement. So that's the kind of the top of the range. But I do like this. I really like this. Today it's just got our moving averages, the 20 and 50 that we look at to cross. Mm. So obviously it's nicer to buy a bit of a dip. Support, there is some support of 4.22. Otherwise the 20 day is at 3.78. But I like it.
Yeah. Okay, good.
4.1 and 4.2 if you're not in next week. Levels to watch.
Okay, cool. All right.
To have another go at that resistance, because I think once we break it, then this stock's really cooking with gas.
Yeah, absolutely.
On its way.
Okay, and the next one is another stock I hold, and it's had a bit of a dip recently. They announced a release.
Are you hurrying me along? I can hear it.
No. I am hurrying. I'm off to the airport later on, but I'm in a rush. But
holiday fever.
Yes. Yeah. So, but I'm interested on this next stock as well, though, which is I own Keffi, and it's come back quite a lot. There are at least an update on the funding they need for the mine they've got, a gold mine. And it wasn't a particularly bearish update. It was that they've streamlined the amount of funds they needed. And I think some people saw that as maybe a rebuttal from current, you know, or prospective funders. And it's come back since then. But, you know, there's crucial news coming out soon about the funding. But it's come back to, from it's gone up, you know, 0.65 down to 0.51. And I'm thinking, where's the support here? Is it that previous high of 0.46? Or what is it?
0.46. 0.46, that previous high, is also the 50% retracement of the entire rally from the 23rd of December. So, yeah, that is it, 0.46.
Wow.
Really good level. And I really like this one. And, you know, 0.46 is not very far below here. We haven't quite bottomed on the oscillator, but we nearly have. So momentum indicators say, you know, we're pretty close to a low. So yeah, I think it looks all right. Worst case, and your stop needs to be below 0.41.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it looks good.
Yeah. So
and I like it.
So you're saying maybe another 10% drop, and that's pretty much it. You're thinking, and then
I do. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know,
and it might not drop there. It might just, you know, make a triangle and then continue.
Yeah.
But I've sent you also for Keffi a weekly chart, mm-hmm. Because the weekly is still overbought and still says we might need to trade sideways for a bit before we continue higher.
Yeah.
So, you know, with these stocks, especially the bullish ones, it's not that they need to come back. Sometimes they just need to go sideways and consolidate the gains they've made before you get people interested enough to buy it again and push it higher, which is really all you're waiting for. You're waiting for people to go, this one does look interesting here. It's got good support. Let's see. So on the weekly, it looks like we're about to get a bullish cross on our weekly moving averages, which we haven't had since 2012. So that would be awesome.
Yeah. And I said they do out, you know, some news on funding, which they've been making positive sounds about. And they have said, you know, it's going to be Q3. So, so, you know, there's a time element there. And so it gives people, like I said, an opportunity to get in here.
Yeah. The weekly is overbought, but I don't expect it to collapse. So that's all I'm saying. It might need to go sideways for a bit, but I like it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Marvellous stuff. And Nick, have a nice week, and I won't be here next week.
Have a lovely holiday.
Yeah, and I'll speak to you the week after.
Okay, bye.
That's it for the podcast. Hey, listen, one more thing. Nobody guessed that Brent crude would be exactly $51.38 at midday today. That means that will roll over. It's rolled over now for 12 times. So the total for next week will be $544.74 plus the price at Brent crude midday next week. So we're talking what? An extra $50? Close to $600 will be up for grabs. All you need to do is go to voxmarkets.co.uk/OPS, make a guess. Submissions have to be in before 4:30 on a Thursday, and we take the price at midday on Friday. Good luck. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.